FreaksAuto.com. Get in the game.
Here we go.
Better late than never. Hello and welcome to the game. I'm John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreilig and Mitch Fortner. The Royals game cutting into part of the show, but with good reason. That was a fun one. Salvador Perez with the go-ahead 8th inning grand slam. The Royals wind up beating the Boston Red Sox to take a game that was looking like it was going to be fairly dreary and disappointing. The Denny Matthews call of said home run was just what you would expect. And we'll play that for you when we come back to start the second hour in the 5-10 segment. Compare it to the TV call of Ryan Lefebvre, and it's going to be a pretty fun exercise there. We've also got Inside the Fort moved to the second hour of the show since we didn't really have a chance to do it, obviously, this hour with the show starting right now, and we'll have You Can't Be Serious at 5:50. Fairly lighthearted show today with not a ton of serious sports topics to really sink our teeth into today. NBA draft is tomorrow, hoping to get Wesley Iwundu on the show for that as well. But in the meantime, you know the phone number, 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350 to call the show. You can also tweet us at TheGameKMAN if you have questions or comments. But just some immediate reaction right now to what the Royals did after getting mowed down by Chris Sale yesterday, which was not surprising. Today, it was dragging along until Salvador Perez's heroics really turned things around in the eighth. And you know, I was sitting here trying to craft like the message for the show and the immediate aftermath of that. It was going to be, well, this is sort of a return back to reality. You play a pretty good team in the Red Sox. You're going to lose a couple of games in a row in the span of 24 hours. And now maybe we got to start reevaluating things here and stepping back from the high that this team has been on. But they just continue to keep it rolling right now, man. They find a way.
And it's another game that reminds you a little bit of what the window was like in 2014 and 2015, them finding a way to win, going up against a team that had been 27-0 when leading after seven innings so far this year. And so, of course, the Royals find a way to win it, and it honestly had probably more to do with the Red Sox in this game than the Royals. Salvi put a good swing on that ball, but the Red Sox had walked the bases loaded to get to that point. So you can't count that out from what was a really big factor in this game, but those things are going to happen over the course of the season. You got to take advantage. And now here we are, Royals two or three games back, depending on what happens with Cleveland tonight. And again, feeling good with a day off coming up.
Kind of what happens when you hit for power. I mean, I know the Red Sox did help out, but the Royals, we've been talking about how much different it is seeing them hit a lot more home runs this year. They're trending towards shattering the team record for home runs in a season. Salvi is a huge part of that, along with Mike Moustakas, obviously. But this was a game that felt like it was out of reach in Boston with the assist, but one swing of the bat there from Salvi really changed the game. And in that way, it gives you almost a different feeling. Now, bases loaded, and was it bases loaded, nobody out there in the eighth? Bases loaded, nobody out. Whether it was the old Royals or the new power-hitting Royals, you were going to feel the same that there was a great chance that they would win. But there's just something, too, the fact that it turns on one swing of the at-bat there from Salvador Perez. I hope I'm bringing you around to this almost being more fun to see them winning this way than the speed and defense thing, because the power is fun to watch.
Well, we did see one walk-off grand slam back in 2014. It was Paulo Orlando that hit it. So, I mean, we've seen it a little bit before in this kind of capacity, but I agree, it is fun. Mike Moustakas hit another home run last night, even though they lost the game, and so he's on pace for, I believe, 44 for the season. But another similarity that it does have with the Royals of 2014 and 2015, Ian Kennedy was pretty average, 4 2/3 innings. He gives up 4 runs, but only 2 of them were earned. And then you see Mike Minor, Joaquin Soria, Kelvin Herrera go without allowing any runs. So you've seen some improvement from the bullpen, and obviously that is synonymous with the old Royals.
Yeah, but I don't want to but too much here on a win like that. That was fun and exciting, but well, Kelvin Herrera always seems to make it somewhat interesting, and he did give up a leadoff double here today. I'm disputing the overall point there on the bullpen. I still have my worries about the bullpen. Like, I think
if they're going to buy, I think that you should go get a bullpen piece. Yes.
Right, and I think if they do buy at all, if they stay in it long enough to get to that point, it is probably going to be for smaller items like a Ryan Madsen type of find that they're going to try and use to solidify the bullpen. That's probably what you're looking at, not anything huge. So I'm not so sure that right now what we're seeing is trending just straight towards no real big dynamic moves one way or the other at the trade deadline, which could wind up being the worst-case scenario, but it's just so hard to fight when it's fun to see them playing meaningful baseball games and continuing to win and stringing together what they are.
You've got 16 games left before the All-Star break now, 32 games left before the trade deadline.
Okay. Well, and really, the All-Star break is probably about as early as you would start hearing real serious trade talks if it were to go starkly one way or the other between now and then. Again, in the second hour of the show, we are going to roll with the punches somewhat, but when we come back, I can tell you that we'll play a Denny Matthews call, if you missed it, of the go-ahead grand slam in the eighth inning for Salvador Perez. It's exactly what you would expect. You're listening to The Game.
Game time.
Time is now!
Driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go!
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Welcome into Hour 2 of The Game. John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, Mitch Fortner. Hour 1 of the show lasted all of about 6 or 7 minutes, so we'll get you more content. Second hour of the show, I can guarantee you that much. Going to play Denny Matthews' go-ahead grand slam call from Salvador Perez earlier this afternoon in just a moment. It was exactly what you would expect it to be. We'll go inside the fort at 5:25 since the schedule's been pushed around a little bit here. We'll put Mitch's wrestling knowledge to the test and get you Can't Be Serious before we're out of here at 5:50 as well. If you have questions or comments, 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350. You can also tweet us at The Game at KMAN. Royals win 6-4 over the Boston Red Sox. It was a really mundane game there for a while, sitting there tracking it for most of the afternoon, trying to decipher what we're going to do for a lot of the show. Didn't think it was going to be very much on the Royals, but then Salvador Perez really changed that with the help of the Boston Red Sox bullpen, walking the bases loaded. Maybe the help of John Farrell as well, Red Sox manager, if you are a Boston Red Sox fan. They seem to be none too pleased with him and how that all worked out. But either way, the Royals won. I'll take it. Made for a much more exciting, fun afternoon.
Also some help from Miguel Cabrera, which
yes,
we have found out.
That has been a cool story here. So Salvador Perez showed the cameras right after hitting his homer that the bat had Miguel Cabrera's name etched on it. So we now have the backstory on the bat. It was given to Drew Butera, who requested a bat from Miguel Cabrera during batting practice, and then Salvador Perez decided to use it. It was too heavy for Drew Butera, and Salvador Perez winds up hitting the first grand slam of his career with Miguel Cabrera's bat. So some pretty good symmetry there with the Triple Crown winner giving his bat, Salvador Perez winding up with it, and good things just tend to happen. The Royals have now tweeted the gif of Salvador Perez spelling it out that it's Miguel Cabrera's and said, sharing is caring at Tigers. So
I don't know if the Tigers
there from Detroit.
Salvi said after the game that he's going to order more bats from Miguel Cabrera. I don't know if the Tigers are going to be okay with that. They're a division rival and they have their own, you know, they have their own sights set on the playoffs. So I don't think the Royals are going to get any more.
Well, I would think that you could just go order as many as you want. Like I would think like I could go order them, because remember when we went into the Royals, like the memorabilia store or whatever, they have just a bunch of different bats, a bunch of the different guys' bats already right there. I bet that you could just go request the specific model of it to, like, Louisville Slugger, whoever.
Sure. You could get a bat that says Miguel Cabrera, but you couldn't get Miguel Cabrera's bat. There's a difference.
So you're suggesting that the power came because, like, they had been delivered to Miguel Cabrera?
Yes.
How do we know Miguel Cabrera had ever actually swung this thing?
I don't know if he swung it or not, but it was his. The only reason that Drew Butera got it was because Miguel Cabrera gave it to him because he owned it originally. That's where the magic comes from.
Okay, so you're just saying, like, by osmosis, it soaked up some of the Triple Crown magic.
Yes.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, Salvador Perez used it to hit a homer. Here's how it sounded on TV. Now, this, for an eighth-inning go-ahead grand slam against the Boston Red Sox when the team is just on fire right now and it's appeared all afternoon like they were headed straight for a loss, this is probably how you would expect a call of said moment to sound like.
Another 3-2. A blast to left field. Did he get it? He did! Salvador Perez with his first Major League Grand Slam.
All right, so there's the TV call from Fox Sports Kansas City with Ryan Lefebvre. Now, Denny Matthews, love him or hate him, has a particular style here.
No one hates Denny Matthews.
He's got, well, I think some people would object to this call that we're about to hear. And he stays pretty much in his same routine for a home run call, and it was no different with the, again, go-ahead eighth inning grand slam off the bat of Salvador Perez.
Three balls, two strikes. Scott to Perez. High drive, deep left field. Back goes Benintendi to the wall and gone. Perez.
I mean, it was the same pattern. Back to the wall and gone. Perez. I legitimately thought when I heard it, I was like, okay, well, this is probably going to be a sack fly. He said deep early on there, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought then, like, sack fly. Let me hear that one more time.
Three balls, two strikes. Scott to Perez. High drive, deep left field.
Okay, yeah, there
back
we go.
Goes Benintendi to the wall and gone. Perez.
So when I hear high drive, deep left field, I was like, okay, well, at least this is going to be a sacrifice fly. I didn't hear too much in terms of inflection from his voice. So I was like, at least the Royals are going to get a run out of this, keep the line moving. Maybe they can get this thing tied. We're in business here. But then all of a sudden, no, it was a grand slam. And looking at it, actually, where it landed, I mean, it was not like it just barely cleared the fence. Like, it was struck really well.
I was listening to the play in my car on the way in, and it took Denny at least 45 seconds to a minute to even mention it was a grand slam.
Yeah, he just let the crowd noise take over at that point.
Which, that's a pro move. That's a good move. You let the crowd noise.
Well, it wasn't just that. He talked about how the pitcher at the time was Robbie Scott, or he's the one who took the loss. But he talked about how when you walk that many batters, you battle with Salvi that long, you know, it's going to happen. Something's going to happen. It's just not your day. And then he mentions it's the first career grand slam for Salvador Perez.
Well, look, I mean, Denny Matthews at this point in his career, I don't think is
not hating on
concerned
him
with all the ins and outs and getting every detail down to the T, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and he shouldn't have to. I mean, he's a legendary voice who's been doing this for 40-plus years. My whole thing here is I actually love that that's how the home run call was from Denny Matthews. I mean, I think there's an aspect of this that you can read into it what you will. If you like the fact that Denny Matthews is like this and you've just grown to know and love Denny and this is Denny, you're going to be all over this and love this, but it's also going to be polarizing the other way. If you're yearning for more excitement and wanting more of the Ryan Lefebvre type of call, you're going to hear that and be like, well, okay, Denny, why can't we get more excited? And I even, you know, one of the Twitter responses that I got quickly when I tweeted about it was like, okay, well, Denny needs to step aside here. He's been doing this too long. I say, no, I'm like, this is why I like listening to Denny, because he just is what he is. You know, at least he just stays true to his style and stays true to what he is.
I very much enjoy the fact that Denny Matthews is the polar opposite from Hawk Harrelson. I don't want the absolute out of this mind going nuts crazy calls. And that's nothing against Ryan Lefebvre. I think that he does a very good job of being excited and still professional about it. I just love Denny, and I don't want him to ever change.
I don't either. And I think there is a value to this. Like, there's not all that many guys. Now, baseball, there are some connections and links to the past and old school guys still around, but not many as old school as Denny Matthews. And like Vin Scully, we just lost Vin Scully here recently in terms of doing baseball games. Don't take me wrong there. Vin Scully, as far as I know, is still alive. But he's not doing the Dodgers games anymore. But these guys with that old school style, it really fits and works with baseball. So I absolutely love the fact that Denny Matthews sticks to his guns in situations like this. 537-1350, 866-776-1350. Let's go to the phone lines here and talk to Beth from Wamego. What's going on, Beth?
Well, I just want to comment that my perspective is that Denny Matthews rarely tells the score of the game, or at least he doesn't tell it as much as I would prefer, because I feel like he expects you to be paying attention. So you already know the bases are loaded. So if he says the ball is gone, you know it's a grand slam because you're paying attention to the game. So like you said, he stays true to his style, but his style is you're listening to the game. You're paying attention. You already know it's a grand slam. There's no reason for me to tell you.
So he's holding you to a higher standard as a fan.
Yes.
Essentially.
And he's done that as an announcer all these years that I've been listening to him. He doesn't tell you the score always because he expects you to be paying attention and listening. You know what the score is.
Yeah, Mitch.
You know how some announcers tell you all the time?
Come on, Mitch. You knew what the score was. You didn't need him to say Grand Slam. Hey, I appreciate the call, Beth. I mean, I think there's something to that. Like, he's more old school where, you know, people are when people are first getting to know Denny and thinking about Denny as an announcer, all these people have memories of just sitting by the radio listening to him, whereas it's different now. I mean, I almost feel like, you know, you have a more of a relationship, quote-unquote, with the announcer, with Ryan Lefevre, from watching all the TV games on Fox Sports Kansas City. I mean, I would say it's just one of those things that Beth even admitted there, that like she wishes she would get to score more from Denny Matthews. And I can tell you, as a play-by-play guy, like the thing that you will hear over and over again, like step one, time and score, time and score, time and score, time and score, time and score on the radio. That is key. That is, if you do nothing else, reiterate the time and score as much as you possibly can. Guys back in the day used to bring an egg timer that would like go off after a minute so that you would get it at least once a minute. And that's a general rule of thumb and a guideline. So if you are doing it now, I would not suggest going the route that Denny maybe does, where he's not going to say it as much, or in situations like that. Yes, you would theoretically want to hit Grand Slam pretty quickly there. But the fact of the matter is, like I said, I mean, Denny's been doing this forever. He's a legend. He's got the legend status in doing it as an announcer for the Kansas City Royals, so it just doesn't matter. I mean, you're not gonna tell him to change anything. I don't think people really are going to clamor for him to change anything, even if sometimes they are left wondering what the score is. You just got to live with it. Like, Denny's going to be what Denny is going to be until he decides it's over.
And I highly doubt where it's at. I highly doubt that any Royals fans are feeling actually angry when they're hearing that call, because your team just won the game, essentially. Like, that's probably the more important thing. The thing that should have more of an emotional attachment is the fact that you won the game. If this happens on a Grand Slam in which the Royals lost the game, if it went the other way, then maybe I understand it a little bit more. But you'll get the score. It's fine. The crowd's going nuts. You can let Denny take his time.
I will say another thing about this is, in 2017, man, pull out your phone. Use Google. Get to the computer. Google it. You can figure out the score. Flip on the TV. A lot of ways to get this done in 2017. Don't call the station and ask us for the score or what time a game is or something like that. You can't be serious at 5:50. When we come back, we'll go inside the Ford. Plus, I think this is a great question. This is a perfect, like, summer topic. And we got more serious with it than we probably should have. Back here on the game, John, Tyler, Mitch, 537-1350, 866-776-1350, the game, KMAN, for questions or comments. Just have some random things to get to as we roll on here in a shortened show in the second hour. It's kind of a fun flying by the seat of our pants day with the Royals. Exciting win. Mitch played the Denny Matthews home run call there. Just as you would expect, not too much excitement for a go-ahead eighth inning grand slam off the bat of Salvador Perez. Mitch actually pulled something out during the break, which I like here, to accentuate the point about Denny Matthews. He is going to be what he is going to be. No matter what, you're not going to change his stripes. He will deliver big calls the same way he always delivers big calls. We'll play back-to-back here. The home run call from today, and then Mitch has the final out of the ALCS in 2014 that he found during the break, which sent the Royals to the World Series, and Denny was fairly deadpan with that as well. So here you go, back-to-back.
Three balls, two strikes. Scott to Perez. High drive, deep left field. Back goes Benintendi to the wall and gone. Perez. So they'll do it again. Alejandro Deyaza, pinch runner at first, good speed, 1-2 on Hardy. Then Greg Holland brings it home. Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball, sets, throws, Royals win it.
You know what? I would actually argue that was on the Denny Matthews scale.
That was pretty high up there.
Yeah, if we're going like, who should be like the top guy that we're talking here? What should be the top end of the scale? From zero what? To...
Hawk?
Well, I mean, Hawk Harrelson's just he's not as much like exciting yelling as he is just a homer. He's just a huge homer.
You can put it on the board, yes. I mean, he screams that into the microphone.
I don't think it's really like screaming. There are guys that are worse about screaming. I don't, on a Denny Matthews scale from 0 to 10, I'd put that at like a 8.
Yeah.
That's pretty high. That's pretty high up there. I was hoping to have a more clever scale for you on that one. But that's pretty high. And even then, it's just very much in Denny's style. I like it. If you don't like it, you're never going to like it. And you're going to have to live with it until Denny decides to hang it up. But that added to me some extra enjoyment to the Royals game today. As weird as that may sound, that almost made it more fun. Do you want to do this guy eating at the same barbecue place twice a day before Inside the Fort, or do you want to just do Inside the Fort and save that? I feel like we should just do Inside the Fort right now.
Yeah, I'm down with that. That's fine.
I think Inside the Fort has got to be a crowd favorite here, so let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, making his way to the ring from Morganville, Kansas, standing 5 feet 6 inches tall, weighing in at 155 pounds, Mitch the Fort Faulkner!
Mitch knows more about wrestling than I know about anything, so we put his knowledge to the test. Once a week, I take a random wrestler and either a random WrestleMania, random pay-per-view, random wrestling storyline, which is the case today, and see if Mitch just right off the cuff can recite exactly the details of the situation or the wrestler. So today, your wrestler, and this one may be out of your reach. You usually get nervous about these, and then you still just nail them.
Yeah.
Knock them out of the park like a go-ahead eighth inning grand slam. This one is from the early 90s, though, which may be just a bit out of your reach.
And that freaks me out.
Okay. The wrestler here today for Inside the Fort is the Mountie. The Mountie.
All right, so I know exactly who the Mountie is. A Canadian from Quebec, which a Mountie is a Canadian cop.
Right.
And he was a bad guy. I don't really know. His shtick was just being irritating, you know. Making fun of American fans. It's better up in Canada. He would later become, well, he would be an Intercontinental Champion. He would later form a tag team called the Quebecers, which
really,
they won the tag titles.
So you're saying that his shtick of kind of like making fun of Americans was kind of Rusev before Rusev was around? Because that's what Rusev does now.
Dude, wrestlers have been doing that forever.
Yeah, there's got to be a million examples of that, right? That seems like the easy way to go about making somebody like a heel. Am I using that right? A heel?
That's heel school day one.
I just know that that's who does it now. I haven't paid attention to wrestling before.
Now, before he was the Mountie, okay, so if you want to even go back further than that, he was in a tag team called the Rougeau Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to make him a main card talent, but that didn't really work out.
You want me to read the description here that I got for this guy?
Sure.
It said, Ray Rougeau retired in early 1990, and Jacques, I guess that's this guy's name, departed the Federation for a year before returning as the Mountie in 1991. The Mountie was a corrupt, cattle-prod-wielding member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police who would often boast that he always gets his man in the ring. That's what I got. So, sounds like you nailed it.
Yeah, kind of.
Now, this one, I just looked up worst wrestling storylines of all time. It sounded so outrageous that I would think you probably have a pretty good idea of this one, and there's even part of it that I was like, oh, can we talk about that on the radio?
Do you know what year
it
is?
Sure. October of 2002.
Oh, no. I think I know where you're going with this.
What? No, let's see if you can
guess.
Yeah,
let me see if you can guess
this. Does it happen to do with Triple H and Kane and a dead woman at a funeral?
It sure does.
Oh, my God.
That would be the Katie Vick story.
This is the absolute worst thing Vince McMahon has ever come up with. I don't even want to talk about it. It's very bad.
Well, I mean, we don't have to go into like that, but more or less, it was like he accused. Which one was it? Triple H accused Kane of killing of some woman?
Yes.
Like, where and why and how did that ever come about?
It's the mind of Vince McMahon, and it culminates in a very disgusting way.
Yeah.
And I
couldn't believe, like, that didn't get him kicked off the air or anything, the end of that one.
Oh, I think they were on the TNN channel at the time, and they got some choice words from them about it.
I can imagine.
I remember that for sure.
I can imagine. Tyler, do you know what this is about?
I had heard, like, just basically what we've discussed, and that's it. Like, I don't know any other details with
okay.
it. I think we could have challenged him a little bit more, because I think most wrestling fans...
Yeah, it's my bad. I always forget that, when I Google, like, worst storylines, that I should go to, like, the bottom of the list instead of the top of the list, because this happened the last time I did, like, a storyline. I don't even remember what that was, but you knew it pretty quickly, because, oh, it was the hand. What was the...
Mae Young and Mark Henry?
Giving birth to a hand or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it was so outrageous that, like, people would absolutely know about that. How, like, Triple H survived that whole thing, that storyline?
And Triple H was the king of heels back then.
Okay.
He was so good at what he did.
Mitch, what was the 10-year anniversary this week?
Of the limousine explosion? Well, actually, we're approaching the 10-year anniversary of the Chris Benoit. Very bad thing that happened in Atlanta, Georgia, the double murder-suicide. But a couple weeks before that, maybe just the week before that, it was the Vince McMahon limousine explosion.
Like, he faked his own death?
Yeah, he faked his own death for a storyline, and later on, you even reminded me of this, Tyler, of Donald Trump calling Vince at his office to make sure he was okay.
After a limousine that supposedly had him inside exploded on
live TV.
On cable television.
Cable TV. Well, at least we know he's always been watching cable TV, and that tradition
that
has
is true.
Not died to this day.
That is true.
You can't be serious at 5:50. We'll head to a break. All right, this guy, I guess, has eaten at the same barbecue place twice a day for 7 years. We got pretty in-depth with debating whether or not we could do that at some place. Also, I've got a good cause that I need you to get behind here for the sake of a friend of mine next on the game. We'll give you that. Back here on the game, we'll do You Can't Be Serious here in a moment. God, I sincerely apologize for bringing that up as a storyline. That was horrifying. Horrifying. Awful. You should have just cut me off when I started going down that road.
How did they
I don't. That, we're done. We're done.
No, I'm just talking about them staying on the air.
Yeah. Surprising. Well, it was 2002, not 2017.
Man.
537-1350, 866-776-1350. The game KMAN to communicate with us via Twitter. Let me throw this in real quick. Buddy mine just found out that he and his wife are going to have a child. I'm trying to make the push here for Michael Bishop to be the child's name.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Really, we are trying to make the push here, I would say, for Michael Bishop to be the child's name.
Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah. I feel like that's a pretty good cause for everybody to get behind, is it not? I've always thought, if my firstborn child is a male, we could almost even go female, make it like Michaela Bishop Kurtz, you know, if you had
no,
to.
No, 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 no. Just go middle name Michael. Just go middle name Michael.
But then where's the bishop? That's not the point.
I don't know.
Michael, it's got to be the full. Listen, Michael Bishop did not do everything that he did in 2 years in Manhattan to only get one part of his name.
Michaela Bishop Kurtz.
In my child's name.
Michaela Bishop Kurtz.
Michael Bishop Kurtz. Yes. I feel like that also ups the chances that my child would be good athletically, which I am not. And that's a big important part here, that I would need to live vicariously through my child's athletic achievements. So that's my personal cause that I'm trying to get behind now, is to make that happen, make that a reality.
I promise you, it might sound like a good idea now, but down the road, it's going to sound really weird and a bit creepy. If you're going to name your kid after a one-time professional athlete, but a collegiate hero, and later on, that if that kid of yours becomes a big name in some sort of sport, ESPN's going to do a feature. Do you know this kid's actually named after Michael Bishop? What was that dad thinking?
That's not going to be creepy. That would be awesome.
It'd be a little bit.
It'd be exposure.
I think it'd be a little weird.
That's exposure right there. It's just built-in exposure.
I will say that Michaela Bishop sounds a lot better than Danielle Sams Kurtz. Definitely.
Yeah, that's another point. No, Michael Bishop would go better. Frank Murphy, maybe. In that pecking order as well. Now, Bishop's the only one that I feel strongly enough about to go ahead and make the name there. I don't know, Mitch. I think you're completely wrong there. I think you helped prove my point that would generate more attention as things went down the road.
What about Bishop as a first name?
Okay. Yeah, I could listen to that. I would consider that.
And just make the number 7 the middle name.
Yes, that's pretty good, too. I just don't feel like it rolls off the tongue quite as well. Bishop 7 Kurtz. I don't think that has as good of a ring to it.
None of this was on the rundown for today's show.
No, it wasn't. I came up with this on the fly. This is something that was on the rundown, but it's not exactly the most substantive story. But Kellis actually is the reason that I saw this. Our friend Kellis Robinette from the Kansas City Star Wichita Eagle. He had retweeted someone on Twitter. It was an article about a guy who lived somewhere in Texas, like Arlington, Texas maybe. He's eaten at the same barbecue restaurant twice a day, every day for 7 years. And the guy is 79 years old. He has stayed at around 190 pounds the entire time he's done this. And he also has had type 2 diabetes since he was a kid. 79 years old, and he's eaten barbecue twice a day, every day for 7 years at the same place.
Amarillo, Texas.
First things first. I knew it was an A. First things first, is that not enough, like, health reason right there that we should all just ditch everything we're doing and eat barbecue twice a day every day for the rest of our lives? The guy's made it to 79, and he's still reasonably healthy.
He's closing in on 3,600 meals at Tyler's Barbecue.
That's impressive. It's impressive. The workers at the restaurant even have his phone number, and if he doesn't show up at noon or 5:30, they call him to make sure that he's okay. Or sometimes he will call ahead to make sure that they know, hey, he's not going to be coming. Everything's okay. So first things first, the headline has to be, you can eat barbecue twice a day for 7 years every day and still be healthy. That's where things have to lead. He likes ribs, so he's typically going with ribs. I think this is a big-time health breakthrough that we have here. But the better debate becomes, could you actually stomach eating something twice a day every day for 7 years?
To kind of slide off topic just for a second, but to bring up a point.
Well, we're on such a great topic anyway. So.
I know. But I felt like I've heard a numerous amount of times of a person, you know, living past 100, like 110, and people ask, hey, what's your secret to living so long? And it's something crazy like you would never imagine, like, oh, I just drink tea every day, but I make sure to have some little bit of whiskey in it or something. I feel like I've heard that so many times. Yeah. There was a lady that drank rum and Coke every day. There was a guy in England or Great Britain that he goes out and runs every day. He still runs, I don't know if he's still alive, but at 104, still running marathons. And after he runs every day, he smokes a cigarette and drinks a beer. Like, it's all these bizarre things that people say is their secret.
Maybe their bodies are just more well-equipped to live longer, and they happen to do those things along the way as well. But I'm discounting my own theory here. I think the answer is that go eat barbecue twice a day. Just don't come back to me if anything goes awry. Is there anything you could actually do or eat twice a day for 7 years every single day? Because my initial reaction here is like, no, there's no way I could do that. You get way too tired of anything. Assuming it's a restaurant. I keep saying eat anything. We're going, like, restaurant. You've got to go to a restaurant because strategically that changes things a lot. To push back on myself and play devil's advocate here, I do. You see, you know, the meals that I bring in Tupperware every day. Mm-hmm. During the week, Monday through Friday, I'm pretty good about eating virtually the same thing multiple times a day. It varies, like, what the meat is, chicken, turkey, maybe some steak or ground beef, something like that. But it stays generally the same, and I do eat it over and over again and have done that for about, I don't know, 4 years by this point. So I'm almost going against my own theory there right away because I'm able to handle that. I just get used to it, and it's like, you know, it's not my favorite thing in the world necessarily, but it's effective, and I do it. So maybe I would actually be able to do this more so than I'm thinking initially.
Well, you've got to have the money to be able to eat at a restaurant twice a day.
Let's assume money is no object here.
Okay, all right.
Let's assume money is no object.
I definitely couldn't do it at any kind of fast food place. Definitely couldn't do it at a barbecue place. I would say it's got to be something light, something like a sub sandwich, like a Mr. Good Sense.
Light.
I'm not trying to be brand loyal here or anything.
Light is key. There's two things here that are very key to me. And that would be, it has to be light, or at least they have a good amount of light enough things on the menu that you could go with that. Because anything like really heavy, I mean, that's going to get old so fast, and you're not going to be able to do it. And, you know, you start gaining weight, whatever, it'd be bad. So you have to have light options, and you also have to have just a wide variety. This is where, like, variety, light, plain variety comes into play here, because that's going to be the easiest way to just palate things over and over again. Chicken and rice, turkey and rice, it's pretty light plane. And, I mean, I don't really have all that much variety, but the light and plain part there is the key. That's how I'm able to do it every single day, more or less, at least during the week. So that, I think, brings you to, like, the just change. What would you call it? Like, casual, fast casual restaurants?
Yeah.
You're just going in there, and I think there's a whole bunch of them. That
you had brought up Chipotle. I can't see how that would be possible.
Yeah, I don't know that would work.
I just don't think that you could do it.
A person needs options, right? So does a place like a grocery store with like the different kind of walk-up restaurants count? Like, there's a couple places here in town. There's like a Chinese, there's Italian, there's a salad bar.
I'm not counting a grocery store, no. No. I feel like that's against the spirit. Whether or not we're going to say like technically it would fall into that category, I feel like it's against the spirit of the rules here in what you're trying to do. So I'm gonna take that off the table as an option. I think you're just looking at any number of, like, the fast casual restaurants. They'll serve, like, your burgers, tacos, salads, whatever. That's what it would have to be. I don't think there's any other way. I mean, Subplace maybe, because you could switch up the sandwiches. A lot of those places do salads and stuff
pasta,
now, too. Yeah, I mean.
Pizza.
Maybe. That wouldn't – I feel like that would not work well enough for me to do that.
So you're talking about an Applebee's or a Chili's or something.
Yeah, you know, something like that. This guy really, like, let's think about this. This guy should be raised up as like a hero or something. I mean, barbecue is one of the things that I would just initially reject completely. And I love barbecue, but it's almost like the food that you love and the places that you love get disqualified faster because they're usually going to be a little more specialized and you're not going to be able to then eat them not only once a day, but twice a day. I've seen stories about guys eating the same thing once a day for a year, maybe 6 months, something like that, but it's never twice a day and it's never 7 years.
They had the movie that came out about the McDonald's guy, Super Size Me.
Yeah, right, Super Size Me, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look what that did to him. I mean, it destroyed him. this guy's doing it in his 70s, man. He's 79 right now, so he's done it from 72 to 79. This guy should be a hero. Needs to be more attention brought to this
man. The marshal, grand marshal of the "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" parade.
I suppose, and at that point, you do get like set in your ways more. So I can see how you would have like that thought, but man, pulling that off—that's impressive. That is some real wherewithal, 16 goals type of stuff there to figure that out. As if that wasn't good enough, double down on "you can't be serious" next in the show. That coming up on the game.
Gosh, he's beautiful.
Did you hear that?
So, we'll open it up to questions.
Johnny Idiot Face over there is never going to bring you a title.
This guy sucks.
Cliff Kingsbury gets me hot and bothered, and I love it. There, I said it. That was from a man.
I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. Why should I play at Michigan?
You are?
That was a clunk. There's not much I can do about that.
You can't be serious.
This is one of the better "you can't be serious" entries I feel like we've had in a long time. Do we all remember Tim Tebow?
Nope.
No idea.
According to this article that I'm reading, the first line in the story says, Tim Tebow, who used to be a bad NFL player and is now a bad minor league baseball player with the Columbia Fireflies, took some ribbing from the Charleston River Dogs this past weekend. First of all, the fact that the matchup, I love minor league baseball. The Columbia Fireflies against the Charleston River Dogs is fantastic. Well, the Charleston River Dogs, who are the home team there, decided to have some fun at the expense of Tim Tebow. So for every player that came up to the plate for the Columbia Fireflies, Tebow's team, they have actually a pretty nice digital scoreboard out in center field, and it's got the square for like the player's picture every time they come up to bat. For every batter in the lineup that was not Tim Tebow, Tebow was batting eighth as a designated hitter. For every other batter, it did not show their actual name, but it would show their picture, their mugshot, superimposed on top of a shot of Tim Tebow on the sideline at playing football at Florida, and the name where it should have the player's name, it just says not Tim Tebow. So for 8 of the 9 batters in the lineup, every time they came up to the plate, the Jumbotron screen just read not Tim Tebow.
That's well done.
That is well done. And you know what? They apologized for it. And like, come on, man. It's minor league baseball. I'm not saying Tebow or anyone complained, but like, let's everybody grow some thick skin and just realize we need to have some fun. Rex Huther was just campaigning this week on the show about baseball gets monotonous, especially if you're in the minor leagues. Things like this take away from the monotony and make it sort of fun. No one's poking fun at Tim Tebow's, you know, like religion here, anything that people get mad at. He's just a crazy lightning rod star for attention, and it's just poking some fun at it. Like, and I feel like Tebow, honestly, I feel like Tebow would be fine. I feel like of all people, Tim Tebow would be cool enough to just let it roll and not care. So why do we need to apologize about this? But that's my favorite minor league baseball gimmick I've seen in a bit.
A pair of Oklahoma high school basketball coaches were fired after they used a school bus to go buy beer on a road trip to like a road game. They left the players behind, so the school bus was empty except for those two, and then they went to buy beer. So they did actually do a good job by not having minors in the bus, because that would have been like illegal. And the reason that they got caught is because the person at the convenience store where they bought the beer saw they were driving a school bus, called that school district to tell them about it, and then they got fired.
Oh.
That's a little bit jabroni-ish right there. A little bit.
Oh, come. I mean, that's oh, not a fan. Not a fan.
Jim Plunkett Cole, he's a famous long-distance runner. He's like a real-life Forrest Gump. At one time in his life, he ran 20,000 miles across the United States in 3 years. So he literally lived the life for a short time of Forrest Gump with his running. But as of late, he's been actually in San Francisco, and he was in San Francisco during the time of the Warriors winning the NBA championship not too long ago. And you know, there's these apps for runners that will actually map out your run while you're done. It'll show you exactly how far you ran. Mm-hmm. Well, he just recently ran so far he was able to spell out Warriors 2017 NBA champs across downtown San Francisco. That took 50 miles, and he got it done in one day.
Whoa.
Wow.
I mean, that's honestly pretty cool. Can I see the picture?
I thought in I thought in San Francisco everybody just rode bikes. I didn't know that there were people that were running too.
No, I think you're getting
a lot of traffic.
I think you're getting that confused with Mitch Fortner, whose lifelong dream on the bucket list is to bike across America.
Hashtag because I feel like it.
Bike across America, Mitch Fortner. It's a cause we can all get behind. Let's start hashtagging that. Mitch bikes across America. It's the official hashtag for it. For Mitch Fortner and Tyler Dreiling, I'm John Kurtz. Thanks for listening to the show today. Tomorrow, we'll talk some NBA draft. Wesley Owundu might be on his way to the league.